empathy for people who don't want to get vaccinated. And there was something that you just said. Wait, what did we just say? Oh, not known for vegetarianism. Well, I don't know. I think maybe what I was going to say was kind of like when in Rome, and which doesn't mean I'm going to go have my vaccination taken away or anything, but I'm really learning how to adapt more. And I am not going to convince people to become a vegetarian by opening a vegetarian restaurant.
Right.
But what I do is every day, almost every day, I make some insanely incredible vegetarian soup, and then sometimes I'll make a bread. And the idea isn't that I'm trying to convince people to eat differently. It's just like, here's some delicious food. It happens to not have meat in it.
This time, Plutopia goes on a ride-along. Our friend Spike Gillespie was literally on the road when she spoke to John and Scoop for this week's Plutopia podcast. Spike takes us on a freewheeling tour of her ranch, her businesses, and Bastrop County. We also talk about her new restaurant in Smithville, Texas, small town Texas and fitting in, glamping, weddings, creating happy communities, and much more. So fasten your seatbelts and don't forget to use your turn signals.
Hey everybody, welcome to the latest episode of the Plutopia podcast. Today, our author is Spike Gillespie, who's returning to hang out with us again.
Hi, everybody.
She's the author of 8 books, a whole pile of magazine articles. She moved from New Jersey to Texas and didn't look back too much anyway. And she also officiates at weddings and she cooks. And she's on her way to feed the livestock as we speak to her.
I am.
Which livestock?
So I have I do live in Smithville, but I own a little ranch in Garfield, technically, for those of you in the area. Garfield's a little community. And I've got, I have 4 horses, and I have 2 donkeys. I have 3 pigs. I have 5.
Well, we're losing your vocal. You went silent. But we're watching you. Oh, there you are.
Hang on 1 second. I got to open the gate. I didn't realize I was losing. Hang on.
Okay. We're watching you.
We'll just let the people that are listening know that Spike is out on the move in the real world and not at her usual place. And she's been driving, and we have to let her know that we're not going to be responsible when the state troopers pull you over for talking while driving. Yeah, it's kind of like texting while driving.
Podcasting while driving.
Yeah. Now, that probably is a crime in Texas, as long as it's not a conservative podcast.
So while you're driving, on your way to feed your livestock, I want to know, have your livestock been vaccinated against COVID?
You know, it's really funny that you ask that, because it's really hard for me to get, what's the name of the stuff? Ivermectin.
Yeah,
it's real hard for me that, because humans are taking it. And I need it for my sheep. I know I didn't come to give you a livestock lesson, but the deal with sheep is it's actually better if you have a small flock like mine. I know you were kidding about it, but it's actually better to be careful with vaccination. People over-vaccinate their flocks, and then the flocks become resistant. There you go. There's your livestock lesson for today.
I wasn't actually completely kidding, because I know that animals can catch COVID as well. So it can make sense to vaccinate them.
Yeah, well, they can't get vaccinated until humans stop taking the
the
cure. Hi, guys.
Well, there's an interesting thing about ivermectin. It actually is effective against COVID, but the dose you would have to take for it to be effective against COVID would kill you.
Oh, so that's how I see.
Well that's,
we had a big debate about this the other day. It says, well, if you're dead, then the COVID's dead too. And I say, yeah, exactly. It was effective against COVID.
Well, then, you know, that means gunshot wounds are also effective against COVID, but not recommended by the medical community.
Yeah, I mean, strategically aimed gunshot wounds, I guess.
Yeah, or actually just about any fatal wound is good for COVID, bad for you.
So all these people who died from COVID, they killed COVID. Anyway, we were going to talk about vaccine today, but I'm actually worried. Yeah, I'm kind of watching you proceed through there. Our podcast people can't see what you're doing, but we can see that you have the horse and the pigs and the livestock.
Yeah. And they're singing.
It makes me feel like a sad, lame person sitting inside his house, not getting out in nature and not hanging out with livestock.
Well, just be glad that you're inside and warm, because the thing about being a farmer is it doesn't matter what the weather is.
You got to get out there. Right.
Yeah.
Do you plant anything there, or is it mostly just ranching?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, and I'm done making background noise now. I opened a restaurant in Smithville. I don't remember the last time we talked, but there's a restaurant there called The Blazer, which is very popular.
I was going to ask about that. I saw The Blazer. I saw photos of food from The Blazer.
Right. So what I'm doing is, in the back room of The Blazer, there's a really small, really cute space. And I have, with the help of Frank, who owns The Blazer, I've turned it into a small restaurant called The Tapas Room. So we're interpreting that real loosely. The most important part is small place. That's the most important part. And so
that's a restaurant within a restaurant?
It's a restaurant within a restaurant. And so The Blazer's at 303 Main. And currently we're doing Fridays and Saturdays. We're working our way up to being open all the time. Whoops, don't kick me, buddy. We're working up our way to being open all the time. But, you know, talk about like COVID's effect, like besides on one's physical health, it is really, really hard right now to get good restaurant help. That's fun for me in the sense that, I did food service for 15 years and I was always on the receiving end of like, can we cuss? I can't remember.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah.
Oh, well, like really shitty pay and really shitty expectations. And a lot of restaurants, in my opinion, and I have done a lot of restaurant work, they really, it's kind of like indentured servitude. You know, you get in there, you're getting like a dollar or two an hour plus your tips. Now you have to pay taxes on your declared tips. And then, you know, then they kind of get the velvet handcuffs going with as much as you can drink, you know. So my point is, these days, what workers can actually ask for, better pay, better benefits, because COVID changed everything when all the restaurants closed. It's really, really fascinating. So we've had different people in the restaurant, but your question was, do I plant stuff? We put in a greenhouse. We're going to grow all our own produce. Today, I'm going to experiment with making our own hamburger buns. And then eventually, we may get some cows for meat. Now, that's something I have to really think about because I'm a vegetarian. I'm also a teetotaler. So having a bar with fresh beef is a little weird. But maybe I'm just justifying this. If people are going to eat food, I would love for people to eat food that's really food that I grew and I raised, and it's the farm to table movement. It's certainly not new, but we're never going to eat any of the sheep.
You could do a vegetarian restaurant, I guess, or a vegan restaurant.
Not in Smithville.
Oh yeah, I forget.
Two customers. Yeah, not in Smithville.
You have to remember what county you're in, and Bastrop is not well known in the vegan community.
Not yet. No. And I, you know what? I'm okay with that because, so I know maybe this can lead up. I was telling you that like, I have empathy for people who don't want to get vaccinated. And there was something that you just said, what did we just say? Oh, not known for vegetarianism. Well, I don't know. I think maybe what I was going to say was kind of like when in Rome. And which doesn't mean I'm going to go have my vaccination taken away or anything, but I'm really learning how to adapt more. And I am not going to convince people to become a vegetarian by opening a vegetarian restaurant.
Right.
But what I do is every day, almost every day, I make some insanely incredible vegetarian soup. And then sometimes I'll make a bread. And the idea isn't that I'm trying to convince people to eat differently. It's just like, here's some delicious food. It happens to not have meat in it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like the old drug dealer thing of, here, try it. The first one's free.
Yeah. I'm
gateway
a dealer.
Soup.
Exactly. I'm a dealer.
You should call it gateway soup.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, what have you guys been? How is Bastrop these days?
Well, I'm up in Elgin, so that's a whole different kettle of fish up here. But, Bastrop County in general seems to be its usual conservative self. They went nowhere with any kind of progressive voting.
Well, I was in Bastrop not long ago, and it looked to me like, just like another piece of Austin, really.
That's how I feel. Really and I don't think it's Smithville is, hey, Maggie, I'm doing a radio interview. It's okay. Okay, thanks. What was I saying about Smithville? I forget. I know that there's a fear in Smithville, like these Austin people are going to come and turn it into Austin. And when people were yelling that at me, I've been in the country for 6 years. And granted, I have an Austin sensibility, but I'm just saying, just like a lot of people say, oh, it's Californians moving to Texas. Well, there's actually a lot of Texans relocating to Austin because of the jobs. Yeah. So I feel like Bastrop, Elgin, all those, can we call them bedroom communities? Are they too far away?
No, I think they're close enough.
No, there are a lot of people that commute.
This is Texas. That's not far.
I'm really curious. I do want to honor the traditions and stuff of Smithville, not like the KKK stuff, but, it's a small town. It's a small Texas town. And I am an outsider. So I want to kind of honor that. And I also want to be myself. And I could be wrong, but I feel like in the months since we've last talked, people are, when I say they're accepting me, they're not embracing me. I mean, I have a lot of friends. There are definitely, I heard the other day, I heard that one of the neighbors was gossiping about what a horrible housekeeper I am. I'm like, is that your biggest complaint? I'm a terrible housekeeper. It's why I pay someone to clean my houses. There's a reason.
I'm sure there's other terrible housekeepers in Smithville.
Now, just that, because one has a vagina residents. Does not mean that one can operate a vacuum. I just want to make that real clear.
Or a Roomba.
Yeah, or I actually can operate a Roomba.
Well, this kind of reminds me of there's a one thing that we teach when we're teaching about online community and talking to people about, how to sort of get into an online community and how to get started with one is that you kind of, you log in and you keep your mouth shut and you observe and you see what people are talking about. You kind of get a sense of the customs and the way things are handled and the way people talk and that sort of thing. And then you come into the conversation when you feel that you kind of got it down. And I think that's true in any case where you move to a new place. You want to take some time to kind of look at how things are done there. And, there are customs. So on the one hand, it sounds like othering when you talk about somebody moved in and they were kind of rejected, but they were probably partly rejected because they didn't take some time to adapt,
And people, I think that that's, if somebody, look, I feel like I've been that person in past iterations of myself when I was younger. And I'm not saying young and foolish. I'm just saying there are different stages in life. Yeah. And I've been a punk rocker since I was 14. So I'm aware that visually or verbally or whatever, some people perceive me as different. But in this case, which was kind of sad and ironic, is that when I got to Smithville, I had hoped to do a very quiet, slow entry and treat Smithville the way I treat when I'm traveling to like Japan or Israel or Argentina or whatever. Just recognize that there are cultures and customs, and I might not love all those, but I think I gave this example to y'all before. When I'm at the Western Wall, I cover my boobs, I cover my head. That's just what they request of me. You know, and when I have an all-women's writing workshop, I expect it to be all women. So I really wanted it to be a very quiet, I wanted to observe, and I wanted to see what I was, I don't want to say up against. I just wanted to see, and I feel like I got shoved into the middle of the playground at recess for being the new kid, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing of othering people, it's not strictly limited to people of a conservative bent. I moved from Texas, you know, back in the 70s, I moved from Texas to Berkeley. And I got othered immediately because I had a Texas accent. Immediately, I was less intelligent, less progressive, just because I sound like a Texan. And
it, yeah, when I moved to Tennessee, the accent was so off-putting to me, and I thought this is going to be just a perpetual episode of Hee Haw. Well, how something of me, how how stupid of me, you know? I've made so many sweeping judgments, and being in Smithville and being on the receiving end of those judgments, I get to reflect on my own personal shit, you know?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I changed high schools my senior year. I moved to an entirely different town, went to senior year, and it was in Odessa. You know, I went from Big Spring to Odessa, which was a real different town. And it was not a bad thing for me. I actually found that that I made a lot of friends there. And, you know, people were interested in me because I was the new kid. Not that they were rejecting me because I was the new kid. So I think it can work both ways. I wonder if you've had people who have responded to you that way in a more positive way.
Yes, absolutely. And you know what? The funny thing is, or maybe not funny, when I talk about moving to Smithville and wanting it to be a quiet experience, I mean, I hadn't anticipated all the hostility. Let's be clear about that. But I also wanted to just be slow across the board, slow making friends. This is going to sound so stupid, ridiculous, and snotty, but like I have so many friends. I have an intense number of friends. I didn't really need more friends, not right away. And so suddenly when this whole thing happened in Smithville, all the nice kids came out too. Like I literally probably have 50 people in Smithville that I know and I already consider to be good friends. And I've been there for 4 months.
That's great. And that is as it should be.
As it should be. Yes. Hang on one second. Have a great time. Bye. There's a couple here. They're getting married, but I'm not involved in that.
Oh, cool. they're getting married. Yeah, what? Next door or close by or on your property?
I own a chapel. I have a lot of weird stuff. And I own a chapel and they're going to stay overnight at the ranch and then get married on Saturday.
Wow, that's great.
That's a great business to have. It's a lot more positive than many.
Well, that sort of brings up something I was wanting to talk about. It's a change of subject, but this is, you know, that's kind of a segue into it. And that was, I saw that you're getting these trailers and moving them onto the ranch and for glamping.
Yes.
How is that working?
Yes, and that was when it's working great. When I got the ranch 6 years ago, that was a dream of mine. But my ranch, when I bought it, it was a abandoned meth lab in a junkyard. And so I had limited funds. So everything has taken more time than I would have wished. But I recently had a little business deal that went really, really well. And so consequently, I'm scampering around now, buying campers and putting up a real fence. One of my neighbors drove through my fence. And then he must have been so wasted, he left the scene, but he left his license plate.
That's always good.
So I called him, and I was nice, and he was acting like there's this idiom that goes like this, don't shit on me and tell me I ordered fertilizer. And he was acting like, how dare I put a fence where he would run into it drunk. Like, seriously. So I suddenly have had all these major expenses come up, but I don't care. I'm making the ranch perfect. I'm making the ranch perfect. It's been a bumpy month. I had two employees who quit with no notice and left. One was stealing and the other was covering for him. It's just been like, it's crazy. But the glamping, I think, is a really good idea. Anytime, I think it's a really good idea because COVID is still raging and people can have their own separate quarters.
Yeah, that's great. Are you going to kind of space them out a bit so that people won't be close to each other?
Well, we're going to circle them around the stock tank pool. So they'll be relatively close, but they won't be on top of each other.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I've stayed at similar setups and traveling, out in the western part of the country. And one interesting thing was when they were close together, you got to meet people because a lot of these campground glamping areas always had a common area, and they would invite, they would have events like, wine tasting or something to draw all the people that were staying into the common area. And that seemed to work really well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. And honestly, I know you said weddings are joyful, but in my experience, the pandemic has changed all of that. I have had people treat me so shitty that I'm actually retiring from performing weddings. I still own a venue, but I have a manager to deal with the clients. Most of the clients who book the ranch are really nice, but because a lot of them had to reschedule and people were locked up in their houses, some clients would come out and they would just feel some frustration they couldn't put their finger on. And they would start yelling at me. Like this one bride, I had to just basically tell her to shut the fuck up. She was standing there. She'd already been whiny all day. And then she was standing at one of the tables holding a tablecloth. And she's doing that thing that like narcissists do, that just waiting for someone to ask her. So I'm like, what? She said, these tablecloths are so, these are the exact same tablecloths. I mean, I can't even believe I'm wasting time telling you guys this story because now I'm losing twice as much time. But she was acting as if I had given her a tour of the ranch and that I had staged it to look like a multi-million dollar facility and that as soon as she left, I moved shit in. No, I showed her everything. It was there. But she had a year to imagine her wedding and she was really shitty to me. And I basically said to her, look, I have to perform your wedding in 2 hours. I am an authentic person. And if I'm in a shitty mood, that's not going to feel really good. I want to bring love to your ceremony. So why don't you tell me what the fuck died and crawled up your ass or crawled up your ass and died. And you know what? She backed out. And later she apologized to me. But I don't know if it's because I'm getting older and the couples are getting younger or if it's the pandemic or whatever. I am completely over marrying people.
Maybe she was just wondering if she really wanted to get married to that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe that. Yeah.
Yeah, weddings used to be a big thing in the music business. Yeah, when I was working with bands in the Bay Area, I mean, that was good money to be hired to play at a wedding reception, and it was all paid in cash. And a lot of people I worked with stopped doing it because somewhere during the Reagan years, the people started getting really bitchy and just insane sometimes, just accusing the bands of not being what they expected and not paying. And it's,
it's terrible.
People have gotten different.
But I do want to clarify and just say that I've done around 2,000 weddings, and I will say like the first 1,990 have been really, or 1,990 have been great. I don't run into a lot of problems. I think this is my personal, like I'm stepping away from incredible money by letting go of this gig, but I'm passing it on to a friend of mine who, just as I was when I started, a mom with a kid still in school. So this is a real flexible schedule. She's young. She has the energy for it. She's great at it. So I have 1,000,000 5-star reviews, and instead of closing my business outright, I'm using it to help somebody else, which brings me way all back to something we talked about a while ago. But in Smithville, in general, some of the people I'm meeting, there are so many women of a certain age there that are single and really happy about that. Really strong women. And I don't care whether they're conservative or liberal or whatever, they will look you in the eye and tell you what they think. And that can feel really tough sometimes, but it's a wonderful way to communicate. I think it is. You know, like I've run into several of my, we'll call them detractors, and I'll just look them right in the eye and say, you know what, your choices are really hurting me. Like, it's okay if you don't like me, but I want to let you know that, like, whatever, when you threaten my life or whatever, spread rumors, it hurts. And that has been really effective for me. It's not like these women are coming forward to be my best friend, but we have an agreement to be civil when we see each other.
Yeah, people have been having so many of these like conversations online where there's really limited accountability or maybe no accountability. And I think they've learned that they found it easier and easier to just tear into somebody.
It's so easy. And I was so good at that. I was an absolute master of eviscerating people. I mean, I'm a professional writer. We could do a joke where you say to me, just for pretend, like, just, you can insult me, make up an insult, and I'll send you a 10-page letter after this interview, after this chat we're having, and I'll just make you feel like shit. And I was really good at that for a long time. I'm so tired of the internet being used for that. I'm so tired of it.
Yeah, it's kind of one of the many downsides of the thing that we built. Of course, a lot of the complaints about this are being piled on Facebook, but you know, it's kind of been inherent in these platforms that people have set up for conversation that are kind of more drive-by. I mean, my tradition is I come from the Well, and on the Well, which is like an online community, it's been around since 1985, and people have these long extended conversations and they get to know each other and they have history with each other. And, you know, you have some friends there and some enemies there. But, you know, it's a community. And a true online community doesn't really cultivate that. I mean, there can be flame wars there and that sort of thing, but it doesn't cultivate that kind of, there's not that lack of accountability because you're coming back to the same place with the same people every day. And I would like to see more of that on the internet and less of the kind of thing that you have at Facebook, you know?
Well, I'm cutting way back on Facebook. I have to admit that the whistleblower case really got my attention. It's kind of like my friend Francesca wrote this beautiful piece and I shared it on my Facebook wall, which is public. And she was talking about like this growing uneasiness. Hey, I've known for a long, long time that social media and just like being alive in the world is detrimental to young women with the, you know, there's a lot. Basically, it would be like, it's like I've been married to social media since 1995. I had a blog in 1995. And it's like being married to maybe a spouse that has lots and lots and lots of attributes, but at a certain point, you just can't deny that he's punching you in the face. And I feel like Facebook in particular, my friend Francesca was saying what's really difficult for a lot of us is that we have so intertwined our work and our social media. Like this morning, I made this amazing sopa de crema de elote for the restaurant. And I want to tell people it's there. So I put it on my Facebook wall. I'm not going to go knock on people's doors, but I'm posting way fewer commentary pieces, way fewer emotional pieces. And I'm just kind of observing because I think it's long past time that I took a personal look at my contribution to the problem.
I'm glad to hear you say that you cut back on the commentary. I've done the same thing recently as the result of all the revelations about you know, the bad actors at Facebook, and it's just ridiculous. I got to the point where I would do things not on Facebook, but Facebook would suddenly start trying to sell me those things. If I did a search about a microphone for my studio or headphones, suddenly Facebook is full of microphone and headphone ads. It's like, no. I did not come here to be, have you pimp your stuff to me.
I don't know. I never see the ads. I screen them out. I just don't pay any attention to them, or maybe my ad blocker gets them. But, I've seen some toxic stuff on Facebook. With the set of people that I actually am connected with on Facebook, fortunately, I don't have too many people who are willing to go toxic or ready to go toxic. When I was making all of my posts public, I had a few of those things happen.
I use the privacy settings now way more. I use block, I use delete. I remind people every now and then it's not a democracy. I'm the queen. This is my wall. I know that sounds very ego, but my point being that I have 5,000 friends, I put that in quotes, and I'm surprised it doesn't get crazier over there more often, but I literally fighting. I just don't. And some people might say, well, it's the only way to process stuff. And my personal goal right now, it's a bit lofty, is to just bring as much positivity to the world. I no longer drink my coffee on the porch because everybody's walking their dogs. Like, if I want to have any time to myself, I have to stay in my house because you can walk in Smithville. You can walk everywhere. People often stop by and hang out on the porch and we catch up with each other. So I don't feel like, I'm a recovering alcoholic or whatever you want to say. I don't drink anymore. I've quit smoking in the past. I smoke again. But those things are kind of hard to quit in my experience. Spending less time on Facebook is not, and the reason is not because I'm trying. It's because I have so many, I'm engaging with life. I'm sitting on my porch with my friends. I'm feeding my livestock. When my ranch hands quit, it fucked me over, but it got me out of my house, driving to the ranch every day. And I feel like, I'm like, oh my God, there's a whole world out there. I know that with the pandemic, we were all like super social media reliant, like to the nth degree.
Yeah. Well, I have a little bit of a different perspective that I've been thinking about, which is sort of like the way I think about Republicans. It bothers me that all the Republicans that are like honorable civil people are leaving the party so that all that's left is these crazy people, And I kind of feel the same way about Facebook. It's like, well, if I leave Facebook, then that's one less voice that's not crazy or toxic. So sometimes I think that I should just hang in there and try to advance the conversation in ways that are constructive and productive and civil versus leaving altogether.
I love that. I think that's a really great idea. And I think I'm doing kind of a hybrid that, right? I'm trying to be positive, but I'm trying to get people to step away from their computer and come eat in my restaurant or sit on my boards, not only for financial gain. I mean, we all need money in the society, but ever since I was very young, I have, what do they call Obama, a community organizer? It's weird. I'm an introvert, but I love creating events.
I can relate.
For Pinky. Do you all know Pinky? She's so active in the Democrat.
Pinky?
Yeah, Pinky.
I don't think I know her.
Well, she's wonderful. And we were talking one day, and I was painting. I'm a novice painter. I just do it to enjoy myself. And I said, Pinky, what do you like to do? She said, actually, I also paint. I said, you do? Can I see? And she showed me these paintings that were so mind-blowing that I asked her if I could host an opening for her at my house, because I have this mammoth. I bought this mansion in Smithville. I mean, it's falling apart, but I live there alone. So I turned the dining room and the living room into an art gallery. I did an art opening for Pinky. And so many people came out. I have no idea what their political persuasion was. I promise you there was a good mix there. And to me, that's like, I'm not trying to avoid problems. Our political system is broken. We need big fixes on higher levels. But for me personally, where I'm at right now is I'm just going to try to create happy communities. That's all I have the energy for right now.
Yeah, that's a very Plutopian thing. That's really what we're about. And that's why we have been varying our interview strategy somewhat. But one thing is that we're trying to talk to people who, number one, are interesting. I mean, you know, there's this thing when you're doing like a podcast or some kind of media thing, you get into this idea of, I want to get people who are really well known and will get a lot of attention so that I can boost my numbers and all of that stuff. And we just kind of tossed that out the window and said, let's talk to people that we like to talk to, you know, and let's talk to people who are going to be fun to talk to and are going to bring some joy to the conversation.
Yeah. And we got to that point, I think, as a result of the presidential election season that we went through in 2020. By the time that year was over, I was done with politics. You know, I've recovered a little bit, but you know, the whole experience of dealing with that much negativity, and of course, you know, I had to push back, you know, with stuff we did, but I found a lot more joy coming from just talking to interesting people about anything. I don't care what the subject is, as long as they're committed to what they're doing.
Yeah, feeding the livestock.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, feeding the livestock, you know, that was a cool thing. I mean, when you said you were going to do that, I thought that's the coolest thing we've done on here is have somebody feed their livestock while they're talking to us.
Absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, I've been saying hi to I haven't walked the dog in a few days because it's a little crazy, but I have a neighbor and he has a Biden flag or whatever it says. It's clearly that he is not a fan of Biden. And I say hi to him whenever I see him. And I don't know what he thinks. I wonder if he thinks I'm being sarcastic. I mean, I'm pretty sure he knows who I am. We live 2 blocks away. But I'm not being sarcastic because I now that my PTSD stuff has calmed down from the initial flag incident, I'm back to really diving into my Buddhism. And this is something in Buddhism. It's in AA. It's in a lot of places where we look for the commonalities, not the differences. So first of all, if I was to talk to that guy, I would say to him, you know what? I'm actually not a big Biden fan, and I think everybody in this town thinks I am. And I'm not, I, with all due apologies to my conversationalist here, I'm opposed to the patriarchy. Like, if you're a white man, not you guys, but in general, if you're a white man in power, I'm suspicious immediately. So it's not like I'm really, really glad at how we had, but there's so much fixing that needs to be done. And I've been a political activist my whole life, and now I'm switching it to doing my activism on my porch. Oh, and the other thing I'm doing, so Pinky's art show went so well and was so well received, I'm going to start a nonprofit called the Persephone Project, and it's going to be for women of a certain age who've been creative in their life and often didn't get recognition because we women have been trained to put everybody before ourselves. So here's Pinky, this exquisite painter who's never shown her art to the world because it's just sitting in a closet somewhere. Smithville is crawling with women like that who are artists and writers, and it's not going to be limited just to Smithville. I have a lot of real estate, and I want to get women who've been creative, who've not been recognized, give them residencies at the ranch, give them residencies in Smithville, and then celebrate them with a show to honor them. Like, that's what I'm doing, and I will not have a question on my form saying, what's your political persuasion?
Yeah. I mean, people identify with some political persuasion, and really we should be discouraging that. I want to discourage people from thinking and talking about politics all the time. I mean, that's not really what life is. And we've been conditioned by the infosphere, and especially by the cable news that so many people watch constantly, to think that life is about politics, and it's all about whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or a Trumpist or a liberal or whatever. And it's not. Those are just labels.
It's about saying hi. Like, Halloween in Smithville on Main Street. I went and sat in front of the blazer, and I just wanted to cry with joy. Everybody came out. Everybody had costumes on. Everybody had masks on. How about that? You know, nobody. I hope I don't sound like naive. I don't consider myself naive politically, but politics has taken up so much of our talking about, arguing about politics versus taking action. I'm just taking action in my day-to-day life now. Also, I'm running a restaurant in a town that, you know, if I want to start screaming shit, well, that's going to ostracize, you know, 75% of my potential customers. That's not me saying that I'm toning my political beliefs down to win over customers. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's so much to talk about. And whenever I meet somebody, one of my favorite questions to ask is, what's your passion? Because unless the passion is politics, you're going to get some pretty cool answers. You know, and I have these two young men who are coming to live at the ranch now, and they're so sweet. One is a disabled Marine, and the other spins wool. They're 25 years old. And we hammered out an agreement, and they came to me and they said, there's one thing we forgot to tell you. And I said, what is that? I was curious. They said, we're conservative. And I didn't laugh out loud, but I wanted to, because I wanted to say, these kids can do anything. They can spin wool, they can feed livestock. One of them bakes like a grandmother from Georgia in the 1930s. Like, they are our super, super secret weapons at the ranch and at the restaurant. If I gave a flying fuck about their political affiliation, I would be down two really great workers. These kids are dynamite, and they really need employment, a place to live. So I get to meet my ideal of helping people to live autonomously. They help me by taking care of my ranch. And together, we see that this so-called political divide is it's just smoke. It's nothing.
Right on.
You know, talking about politics in Smithville, I was reminded that it was just this week an election, because I noticed that suddenly the sheriff of Bastrop County jumped on a gambling operation in Smithville. Was it the Leopard Lounge? Did you follow that? They never enforce that stuff except in an election.
I saw it, but I do follow it. Yeah.
I've noticed that in Texas, you know, they have the laws against gambling, but they don't really enforce them except when there's an election coming up and they want to make points showing that how good a law enforcement agency they are. They'll go and jump on somebody's card room.
Yeah. It's so stupid, right? It's funny. I'm watching Yellowstone right now. I don't know if you guys have watched that show.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I obviously it's incredibly hyperbolic and it's soap opera. But I swear, like, I went from living in the country to living in a small town in a conservative county. And it's not changing my mind politically, but it's really giving me insight into, I'll give you a great example. I was leaving Brookshire Brothers the other day. A guy was walking across the parking lot. He had his sidearm on. And I thought, oh, my God, if we were in Austin in Whole Foods, people would be calling the management, flipping out, having a nervous breakdown. I carry a sidearm. I don't carry it into the grocery store. But when I saw that, I thought, wow, that guy, before open carry became a thing, it was probably annoying to him to have to unstrap every time he went and ran an errand. I'm not here to fight about gun rights. I'm talking about people's perspective. Before I moved to a ranch, I was such a hardcore left-wing anti-gun radical. Shit, I meant to grab my guns while I was at the ranch. And now I have a gun collection. I shoot, I take lessons, I'm really careful. But now when I see somebody with a gun, which is really common in Bastrop County, it doesn't make me flinch the way it used to. So am I turning into a redneck? What do you guys think?
Yeah, I wish I had a gun. Well, I think I could probably use one right now.
Well, yeah, I have to confess, you know, I've owned firearms since I was, 10 years old. Growing up in West Texas, you were required
No, I wasn't required to.
Well,
you know what happened to me was that I had a BB gun and I shot a bird off of an electrical line or something wire. Like that.
Yeah.
And I was so devastated by that and was so upset and, you know, had to bury the bird and all that my dad figured, nah, this guy ain't going to be one for guns. So I never really had guns. Yeah. My brother did, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And they didn't take me hunting. They didn't even ask me to go hunting with them. You know, they just kind of figured I didn't want to.
Yeah, my dad, you know, was all in favor of having guns, but he was never a hunter. I've never been a hunter either. It's like there was a reason for the guns, you know, to protect yourself from wild animals, perhaps. But it was just a thing that happened, you know, growing up in Texas. You're pretty much required in some areas to have a gun.
That brings me back to culture, which is I feel like so many – one of the drawbacks of the internet is that whole polarization, right? You can just be like, I hate guns. I love guns. Look, I'm not a member of the NRA. It's funny, I went to buy a belt buckle the other day, and they were like, you're going to be so happy we got a bunch of NRA belt buckles in. And I was like, oh, I must look like a card-carrying member of the NRA. But guns are just like I feel weird about being a vegetarian and raising beef. I think all humans we justify, right? We create a narrative that works for us. But now that I know how to use guns, I wouldn't want to live without one. And the reason I got my gun was to control the wild animal known as my ex-boyfriend, the meth head, who was threatening to kill me. And so that's when I called the sheriff out, and I said, I don't know what to do. I got a shotgun next to my bed. And he goes, let me tell you the best kind of mount to get for that so you can fire easy.
That's good advice there.
That's life out in the country. I mean, you know, and he's telling me the rules about when you can and can't shoot somebody or not shoot him in the back. By opening my mind to a different culture, I'm getting quite an education. I do not agree with everybody and all their choices, but you know what? They don't agree with me and my... Always to me, that's always, always, always the irony is just like I support abortion rights, and within abortion rights, you can choose to not have one. That's it. That's your right. And I feel that way with these folks is like being a liberal, extreme liberal means to me that I accept if you're an extreme conservative, that's your absolute right. I'm not here to try to change anybody. I was going to say this because I know we're coming up to the top of the hour. You know, I had emailed you and said, or messaged you and said, something I'm having a hard time resolving inside of myself is I really wish everybody would get vaccinated. I do. I really wish that. But I just cannot whip myself up into rage against people who won't. I mentioned that in 1986, I was in college and they mandated German flu shots to enroll in the next semester. And I went to the medical center and I said, I think I might be pregnant. And the woman said, don't worry about it. And I got the German measles shot. And 6 weeks later, I had a miscarriage. Now, bear this in mind. First pregnancy miscarriages are extremely common. It's incredibly possible that measles shot had nothing to do with my miscarriage. But also bear in mind that over the decades since I've been in college, I read more and more reports of these really whack job perverted gynecologists. Well, the University of South Florida had one of those, and he did all kinds of weird treatments on me. I don't have any evidence to support this, but bringing this all back to the COVID vaccine is, there are so many historical cases. There are so many. Oops, are you still there? There are so many historical cases. I had Do Not Disturb on, but somebody got through. There are so many historical cases where the government says one thing and then it's not true. Vietnam is one. Thimidolite. Is it Thimidolite? Is that the name of it?
Thalidomide, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so I told you my German measles experience, which may or may not have been related. But now I'm watching the very hyperbolic show Dope Stick on Hulu about OxyContin. And the FDA pushed that through with special labeling. And we continue to have a horrible pandemic or whatever, a horrible drug addiction stuff that all goes right back to OxyContin, and the government was behind that. So when somebody
so
says,
is the problem? I don't completely understand the OxyContin problem, because I mean, I know about oxycodone, and I think it's a very effective pain reliever, and some people, you know, really benefit from being able to take oxycodone. OxyContin is a time release version of it, and my understanding is that it's much easier to abuse that because you can actually get a bigger dose because it's time release, and you just kind of crush it or something.
You crush it and snort it or shoot it. And so, and it's really, really, really hard to kick. I'm so fortunate I never did OxyContin. My dentist used to be, back, everybody's dentist did this. You could call up and say, I think I'm going to have a toothache next week. And you would get prescribed like 80 Vicodin. I didn't even know Vicodin was an opioid. Like, booze has always been my thing. I'm not really a drug person. And so I'm watching the show and I'm like, thank goodness I've had a lot of surgeries. I'm glad I never got put on that stuff. So my
is it necessarily a bad thing, or is it, I mean, like I say, the problem is that there's such a panic now about opioids that people who really need opioids can't get them. People who are going to be in severe pain otherwise.
Right. And that really sucks. I had a friend the other day who came back from surgery and they gave her tramadol, which is just bullshit. You might as well just give somebody, a placebo as far as I'm concerned. So I agree with you on that point. But when I'm getting the point that I was making was that the FDA pushed that through, and they also pushed it through saying that like this was a tamper-proof coating. It's not tamper-proof. So when there's big money involved, I took the COVID shot. I got both shots and I'm going to get a booster. I've read a lot of articles. I believe in the science of it, but I also know that human beings, we believe what we want to believe. We don't, I mean, look at cigarette ads from 60 years ago where doctors are telling you cigarettes are good for digestion. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I'm saying that I respect people's suspicion of government mandates.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. It's a real problem because for public health, if you have a public health emergency, it's really useful if you're able to, if you're able to make the kinds of mandates that they've been talking about and just tamping the thing down. And because there was such an inconsistency about it, they weren't able to tamp the thing down, and it was a real problem. But, there not only was a suspicion of the government and the science and so forth, but there was also, because it was sort of like a fast moving thing and we have the kind of communications environment we've got, people could see that the public health professionals and the scientists were, as they will do, were evolving their thinking and changing their minds about things. And that people found that really disturbing, but that's just how it works.
Yeah. I know, but that thing, I really wish they had never dropped the mask for my own personal reasons. So, right, if you were to look at my Facebook wall, it would bore you. But my point is, I was begging people to wear masks for about a year and a half, just begging, begging, begging. And then when the mask mandate went away for a little while, I became just as complacent as everybody else. I do not wear a mask consistently. I don't. And that's on me. I have a lot of friends who aren't vaccinated also. And so that's like, That's me believing what I want to believe, like that my double vaccination protects me, not necessarily.
Yeah, it clearly won't protect you from at least getting sick to some degree in the same way that we might have imagined at first.
Well, another thing that I have heard, I'm also curious, there's so many medical professionals who don't want to get shots. That's interesting to me. But I was going to say, I forget what else I was going to say about it. I don't know. I'm grateful for the shot. I'm also like, I'm 57. I'm not pregnant. I don't. I've had a really enjoyable life. And if I die, too bad for me. But I had a really good time.
Same here.
I'm more concerned about the young people. when I was in my 20s, I was traveling and learning and stuff. And there's a lot of people who are just like, everything's on hold, you know?
Well, you know, and we never would have got to the point we are now where people really can get out and really can do things if it hadn't been for the vaccine, even though we don't have like 100% or even 90% of the people vaccinated. The vaccine has led to a much better outcome than we were having, you know. So the vaccine is important and it's effective, but I'm with you. I understand why some people don't want to take it. And with masks, I have a theory that people don't want to wear masks because they just have bad breath.
Yeah, the thing that concerns me about the whole vaccine issue is that people are beginning to, because of the fast turnaround of the vaccine, they're trusting the pharmaceutical companies again. And that's really a bad mistake, because if you look at how vaccines are being handled worldwide, the pharmaceutical companies don't want to give away anything in the developing world. In Africa, maybe 1% of the population has been vaccinated, whereas, you know, we have 70 some odd. And that's something that the pharmaceutical companies say they don't want to be giving away a lot of stuff. So, you know, they are just as greedy as they always were.
Well, yeah, and they've been that way since I've did some work with pharmaceutical companies, some minor stuff, but it was clear that they're definitely in it for the money. And
watch Dopesick. You'll see. I mean, it's disgusting. It's disgusting. Yeah.
I mean, some are worse than others, but you know, it's an effect of capitalism. And you know, if we had another hour, we could rave on about capitalism. I'm sure capitalism has some real downsides. And I say that as somebody who actually kind of believes that capitalism is a good thing, but greed is not. And the problem with capitalism is that it gets infected by greed.
Well, capitalism in the hands of the good people may be a good thing. It's just like guns in the hands of good people are a good thing. Give it to the wrong person and it becomes something really ugly.
Yep.
Right. But then the next question is, then somebody has to judge. Someone has to be the judge, and people who are judged hate it. Like, even if they're felons. I'm not saying that makes any logical sense. I'm saying that I think a really big problem in the whole world is a lack of accountability. Matter of fact, the reason I've been driving during this interview instead of snuggled up with my dog is I made a massive banking error that was there was no excuse for it at all. But consequently, my contractors who are here working in this shitty weather, I wrote a check that bounced. That's so embarrassing. That just shouldn't have happened. Wrong account. But anyway, I just drove to the bank and got cash. Because I feel like such a jerk, and they have to feed their families and stuff. Like, I'm not going to say, hey, wait for it to roll through or whatever. I don't love AA. We could talk for a long time about all the things I can't stand about AA. But one thing I got really drilled into me was accountability. And I really feel like there's a lot of unaccountability with whatever, government, pharmaceutical. Even if people go into politics with idealism, I think because it's such a horrible game, everybody gets corrupted. Even if it's that they can't push through the things they promised they would push through.
Well, and you know, the other problem I see is that people just don't care. We haven't taught people to care. And there's some, like, maybe it's a generational thing or whatever, but it's like it's an infection. It's like it became really persistent all over the place of people just not giving a shit, you know?
I think too, though, that gets fed because people want fast change. Change is slow. And it's like, if I go out and vote and the same clowns are just doing, you know what I mean? Like, look at Virginia, right? I feel like it's healthy to admit that there is a 50-50 split in this country. And, you know, again, to sound like Pollyanna, but unless we learn how to, like, get along with our neighbors, it's just going to get worse.
And yeah, we should be talking to each other instead of screaming at each other.
I make a point of that. Here's a hilarious thing. I know we're at 2:00 here. I'll say this real quick. So I have face blindness. It's a real thing. And I can't recognize people when I meet them again. This actually happened once when I was meeting my son for dinner. I was scheduled to meet with him. And I walked right past him. He's like, I'm right here, Mom. So that's how bad my face blindness is. these people who bitch about me and talk about me, the other day, oh, this is hilarious. This woman was talking to me the other day for a good 5 minutes, and all of a sudden I thought, oh my God, that's so-and-so who did this really horrible thing to me. I should be mad at her. But it wasn't her. But I couldn't tell. Like watching Yellowstone, all the characters have beards. I can't tell them apart. The way this benefits me in Smithville, if I'm walking down the street, I say hi to everybody. I have no idea who hates me and who doesn't because I cannot recognize faces. It's the greatest hashtag blessing in the world.
Wow.
And I mean, maybe they think I'm being sarcastic, but I cannot recognize their faces. So I just say hi to everybody.
Yeah, that's a good strategy, especially where you are, because growing up in a small town, you know, being friendly to everybody was just a good strategy because, you know, if you were just ignoring everyone, they think, you know, they're either stuck up or stupid or, you know, or evil. So being nice to everyone was always a great strategy.
Well, and the other part is that we are all one. We're all part of the same
thing.
Well,
and it's also the Halloween thing. It was so, you know, maybe we should have Halloween every day. Like, that is a non-political. I know some people think it's the devil's work, but let's set those people aside. No Jehovah's Witnesses in this conversation. Halloween is a nice middle-of-the-road holiday. The kids' minds are blown. You tell them they'll talk to strangers, and then you go knock on strangers' doors, and they give you candy. Like, it's mind-blowing for children. I don't know about in Austin, but in Smithville, the parents get into it. Everybody had on costumes. Everybody was happy. And not only that, like, here's your metaphor for the day. They were literally disguised. Like, we couldn't tell liberal from conservative, from, like, conspiracy theorists. We couldn't tell anybody. Maybe we should all wear Halloween costumes until the pandemic is over and the government is run by women.
Yeah, that's one way to get people to willingly wear masks, huh?
Yeah, for once you couldn't tell the anti-maskers.
Well, we are actually at the end of our hour, and this has been great. It's been a
really
lot of fun.
To you guys.
Yeah, we'll do it again soon.
Come to the restaurant. I'll cook for you.
Absolutely. We'll be out there.
Okay.
All right,
y'all take
thanks,
care.
Spike.
Okay,
bye.
See you, Spike.
Bye. Thanks.
You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lepkoski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.